Olive leaf extract is an extraordinary source of the beneficial polyphenols found in olive oil and in olive plants. And now you can get all the benefits from a supplement, olive leaf extract, available through drhoffman.com. Olive leaf extract, one of my favorite supplements. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And a couple of weeks ago, I was invited by Kevin Geary, an integrative health coach, to participate on his podcast. His podcast is at rebootedbody.com. And he is host of his own series of podcasts, the Rebooted Body Podcast. I thought I would reciprocate by inviting him on today's program. The subject is how to reboot your body. Kevin Geary is an integrative health coach, and he is founder of Rebooted Body. And he has a very interesting blend of ancestral science. He partakes of some paleo concepts and some modern psychology concepts to motivate both men and women to reprogram their bodies and minds for optimal health. He attacks the issue of weight loss and peak performance. And his website is extraordinarily popular. He has a big outreach in 17 different countries. And he represents a new generation of active health coaches who are using innovative methods to get people to move towards transformation. Now, in the old days, we called this transformation. Now, in the computer era, we're using the concept of a reboot. So, welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Kevin. It's nice having you as my guest, and I enjoyed very much talking to you. Can you give us the details on how people can access that great podcast we did together a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, they actually can go to rebootedbody.com/iTunes. That's probably the best way, and it'll come up right there in the feed.
Okay. And we could tell right away our listeners are attuned to the fact that you're a professional podcaster because you have the most awesome sound technology. Most of my guests are speaking to me over a crummy handheld phone and sound terrible, but you sound awesomely good. So you're obviously geared up technologically to deliver the message.
Yeah, we do it right around here.
You absolutely do it right. So tell us a little bit about how you got into this personally.
Yeah, like in 2009, I was over 220 pounds, and I am definitely not supposed to be.
Do you mind sharing your age? How old are you now?
Yeah, I'm 30 years old.
Okay.
And
you're a young daddy as well.
Yes, absolutely. I have a daughter that's just turned 21 months old. And so mid-20s, and I'm sitting in the doctor's office, and he's basically telling me that I have high blood pressure and I'm pre-diabetic, and you know, I'm pretty sure that's not supposed to happen to somebody in their mid-20s. Really shouldn't happen to anybody, but definitely not in your mid-20s. And it kind of hit me hard that I really needed to change some things. And it's not like I hadn't been trying. I mean, I was following conventional wisdom. I was basically yo-yo dieting. So every time I would manage to lose a bunch of weight, I would gain back that weight plus some. So, you know, I really wanted to change back when I was 185 pounds, but through the process of listening to conventional wisdom and going up and down and up and down, I managed to diet myself up to over 220 pounds.
Now, is this a common phenomenon among people your age? Because I see this not so much in my generation because we have a whole other set of problems. But young folks your age, I see this phenomenon where guys are pumping iron and they're athletes in high school and college. And then they get busy. Life happens. They start very busy jobs. They start eating haphazardly. Relationships develop. They start maybe having kids. And then suddenly they wake up when they're 28 or 30 or 32. And they're overweight, and they got a high school reunion coming up, and it doesn't look pretty.
Yeah, and I think it starts in college. I mean, I don't know when the concept of the freshman 15 was introduced, but it's basically the concept that, you know, you become a freshman in college and there you go, you gain 15 extra pounds. And it's just the whole lifestyle thing of college is probably one of the worst things for your health that you can do. You are extremely overscheduled. You're always trying to stay up late to cram for exams. You have access to crap food. It's just not a good situation. And I think that's where it starts for people. But then, obviously, when they get out of college, there's the whole family thing, and they're trying to build a career. And they just never stop, and they get caught up in everything, and things get out of control. And if they're listening to conventional wisdom and trying to diet to counteract a lot of that stuff, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse because that knowledge or that information, that advice doesn't work.
Right. You say on your homepage, I want to teach you how to ditch dieting, obsessiveness, and frustration in exchange for an intuitive approach that puts you back in control and works with your body instead of against it. Do you feel a lot of people are barking up the wrong tree? They're following obsessive programs and they're constantly wrestling with their metabolism and it's not working?
Yeah, everybody is typically fighting against their body instead of working with their body. And it's very hard to find a program that doesn't teach obsessive principles, that doesn't have you weighing yourself on a scale and tracking calories and weighing food and controlling portion sizes and running a certain distance and a certain amount of time, a certain amount of days per week. I mean, it's all based on numbers and tracking and obsessiveness. And the art of listening to our body has been completely lost on an entire generation or multiple generations of people.
Well, you know, some of the fads and crazes in fitness have contributed to this because there's the juicing, the vegan, people who are the marathoners, ultra-marathoners, triathlon's very popular. But what ends up happening is sometimes people end up in sports medicine practices or also CrossFit, you know, which is a phenomenon that I think is sweeping your generation, but may end up deleterious, harmful in terms of injuries and breakdowns.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's looking for the next best thing instead of breaking it down and going back to basics and figuring out, okay, what does my body want? What does my body need? How can I give it that? And how can I give it that consistently? We don't need all of the, next best concepts. So if you want to do, and the way that I define CrossFit and all that stuff, I mean, those are legitimate sports. And if you are interested in the sport of CrossFit, then go do the sport of CrossFit and find a really, really great coach. But CrossFit is not a weight loss program. CrossFit is not an activity that I would recommend for the lay person who wants to lose weight because it is highly dangerous. Even if you have a good coach, there is still a good chance that you could get injured. Long distance running is the same thing. That is not something to do for health and weight loss. It's highly inflammatory. It breaks the body down. So I don't recommend it. We have to figure out if you are really interested in health and losing fat in a sustainable way, it's all about finding out how to work with my body instead of against it, period.
And you use, you know, old-fashioned term was transformation, new tech, new speak. A lot of people are bandying about the word reboot, and that's actually the theme of your website, rebootedbody.com. So just as a computer, you know, it's not working, you reboot it. How does that translate to human physiology?
Well, it's reboot and the second computer term is to reprogram. So everything is kind of scrambled up right now. We're headed in the wrong direction. Let's hit the off switch. Then let's turn it back on. And then we're actually going to reprogram the whole system. So I'm going to reprogram your body, which means I'm going to get your metabolism functional again. And I'm going to reprogram your brain. I'm going to get your mindset on a healthy track. So we're doing work with both the mind and the body.
And really, that goes hand in hand. Now, you borrow a lot from paleo concepts because, you know, if we really study paleo man was not involved in running a daily, you know, 7.5 miles and then logging it into, you know, some sort of handheld computer wristwatch to determine how far he could run in preparation for the Boston Marathon. They did engage in sporadic activities, but they were sort of more intuitive about it. Same thing with diet and eating. It was, you know, not every day, same, you know, pattern, eat small, you know, meals with snacks in between at certain fixed hours because they didn't have wristwatches.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, paleo is a good starting point and it's a good framework. I don't like the name of it. Because it doesn't really align with the story they try to tell, and the story they try to tell actually has a bunch of issues. Because you know there wasn't one caveman that lived, and really people didn't even live in caves; they migrated a lot. So there's a lot of issues with that brand. And you know, I just got back from Paleo FX in Austin, Texas.
Right. So, tell us about that. That's an amazing event these days. It's such an important event. Thousands of people go there, and it's a big. It's like Woodstock 2014, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great event, and even they acknowledge, even the paleo leaders acknowledge the fact that this is a lot more complicated than the original paleo brand story kind of makes it all out to be. And I kind of saw that from the beginning that you know, and paleo as a diet, because it was originally called the paleo diet, was basically a rule book for how to eat based on this. And it's evolving past that. It's transcending that because it has to. Because there were some concepts in the original quote-unquote paleo diet that don't apply to everybody. And the key here is that this stuff has to be individualized. You have to mold it and shape it to your individual needs because everybody is different. And we can't take a one-size-fits-all approach in any shape or form and pretend that it's going to work for everybody. So in the very beginning, I kind of saw this. I've avoided using any sort of label for any type of diet or eating plan. I don't have a name for mine. I teach people how to figure out what foods work with their body and what foods their body doesn't agree with, and we go from there. And then we learn an intuitive eating process and so on and so forth. So I don't think it needs names. I don't think it needs brands. It just needs individualized approach.
And that brings us to a second term borrowed from computer technology, which is, you know, clearly that's got a lot of appeal across your generation, which is the term hack. And, you know, we talk about hacking computers and, you know, most young people with a modicum of skill and expertise can hack their way through, you know, virtually any kind of computer problem. It just involves a little bit of intuitiveness. You talk about hacking your diet, hacking your sleep, hacking your exercise program. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, hacking is basically, you know, slicing stuff up, piecing it together, doing what needs to be done to get the final answer and the final outcome that you're looking for. I think the biggest mistake people make is they read about something and they try to apply everything as it's written to their life. And nobody can really write anything that applies specifically to you. There are general concepts, and you are going to have to put them to the test and verify that they actually align with your needs. So that happens with food, that happens with exercise, that happens with sleep, that happens with getting sunlight. Everything that we talk about has to be, like I said, molded and shaped to each unique individual.
So give us an example from, you know, your own personal experience. You know, you say you were, you know, 220, you were out of shape. What did your personal exploration lead you to adopt?
Well, there's a couple examples such as, and I'll go back to using paleo as an example because paleo says not to eat dairy. And some people, a lot of people, quite frankly, tolerate dairy. And if it's high quality dairy, so we're talking grass-fed dairy, or the best thing you can do is if you have access to raw dairy, that would be the best way to go. But if you can tolerate dairy, then I don't see what the problem is. If your body agrees with dairy, then go ahead and eat dairy, right? But the paleo diet, quote unquote, says don't eat dairy. Well, there's no foundation for that. There's no reason for that. Another one is with legumes. Now, I personally don't eat legumes, but there are people who tolerate legumes, especially if they are prepared properly. So I'm not one to tell somebody else that they can't eat legumes if they find out that their body agrees with legumes. So there's all of these kind of rules, and that's what I'm talking about. That's what has to be tested. Now, going a little bit deeper, some people have found out that they are sensitive to a family of plants called nightshades, which cause skin and joint issues. These are things like tomatoes and potatoes. So that is real food, right? A tomato is real food. A potato is real food. That doesn't mean you can eat it. Some people can't eat nightshades because they react to the alkaloids in the food. So they have to avoid those foods, whereas another person like myself easily eats tomatoes and potatoes. So there, you can do this with FODMAPs. You can do this with goitrogens, which affect the thyroid. We can do this with a lot of stuff. So you can't just say, and this is, I wrote an article on this the other day, the concept of, that's very popular right now, just eat real food. There's a lot of real food that somebody may not be able to eat. And that's the message I'm trying to get across, that we can't continue to oversimplify this stuff. I don't want to make it sound really complicated, but we can't oversimplify it either. We always have to test and find out what we need ourselves.
Well, you know, as you know, there's a big schism in the nutrition community between people who are dyed-in-the-wool vegetarians or even vegans who claim that that's the way to go. It's also the way to go for our planet, for the environment, for the sake of sparing animals all the cruelty. And then there are the people who go to the other extreme and say, look, protein is our natural genetic endowment, you know, our ability to handle, harness animal protein. We need protein. We need animal fat. Forget the low-fat diets. So where do you stand on that? Or do you think there really is diversity among people genetically?
I don't think there's diversity in that regard. I mean, we are built to eat animal protein. Okay, so if you look at the design of the human being, I mean, we're built to eat animal protein. So that's not something that changes. What I'm talking about is the complication of our gut, right? Our gut is such a complicated functioning unit, and the gut flora is so widespread from person to person, and this is really what's responsible for, can I tolerate X food or Y food, and why can't I tolerate it when the person over there can tolerate it? That's not to say that, you know, one human being is so radically different that they are built to only eat vegetables and fruits and plants, where another one is built to eat protein. That's not something that radical is not happening here.
So you think that the gut and the microbiome, the bacterial composition of our gut, to some extent can translate some of our food preferences or transmute foods either into good substances or bad substances in our bodies?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the function of the gut and the whole reason for its existence and how it works, I mean, it's really a tube that goes straight through your body, and its sole job is to determine what gets in and what doesn't get in. Now, if you have gut issues, sometimes the bad things get through the filter, right? But if you have a healthy gut, then your gut does its job, and it determines the nutrients that you're going to get, and it's going to determine what toxins get avoided, and so on and so forth. So I do think that a lot of people, and people find this all the time, is that when they have gut problems in the beginning, there are some foods they cannot tolerate as they follow, you know, a better protocol for eating, and their gut starts to heal. Those foods that they used to not tolerate very well actually become tolerable. So there are changes that occur as far as digestion and gut health is concerned.
What are your bones to pick with modern medicine and the way that we handle medical problems?
My biggest issue with the way that modern medicine handles problems is they don't start with the simplest solution first. So they do a bunch of testing and a bunch of complicated stuff and a bunch of costly stuff, really, when they could just start with – I mean, if you come in – if I'm a doctor, right, a mainstream doctor, and somebody comes in and I don't know who this person is and they tell me that they have so-and-so problem, it doesn't really matter what the problem is. I mean, the first response to everybody that walks in my door should be, what are you eating? How are you sleeping? And just basically going over general lifestyle stuff. How stressed are you? I mean, that is the simplest place to start. There is no reason to start doing a bunch of complicated testing, right? So we start to change the person's diet. We start to change their sleep. We start to change their lifestyle. If they're still having problems after that, let's go explore.
Well, unfortunately, I think as we discussed in my podcast with you earlier, if you want to go back to that, all the incentives are misaligned in modern medicine. The economic incentives are aligned towards fancy schmancy testing, which sometimes doctors profit from. But even if they don't have greedy motives, they're motivated by fear of legal retribution and professional censure if, God forbid, that headache turns out to be an early brain tumor. Or if that minor stomach discomfort is a harbinger of esophageal cancer. So they will front load a medical workup with, let's rule out the most dread possibilities. Is it a brain tumor? Is it pancreatic cancer? And only then, after it turns out you have nothing, then they turn you loose to the lifestyle coaches and say, well, maybe you should change your diet.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have a problem with testing and ruling stuff out if that's what the patient wants to do. I would also say, though, perhaps do this stuff simultaneously. Why not do a test and then, while we're waiting on the test results, start talking to this person about diet and lifestyle changes? I mean, we can hit two birds with one stone very easily. I think the biggest thing is that they do the tests and the complicated stuff, and they never really get around to the diet and the lifestyle stuff.
Well, that's actually precisely what happened with a patient that I saw earlier today. She's an older woman, has a history of Crohn's disease. She's having some stomach problems. By the way, she got better after listening to a podcast that I did broadcast that I did on the radio in 1992. So after following that diet, she did better, but now she's become less stringent on the diet. She has some gastrointestinal problems, and she says, I didn't want to go to a gastroenterologist and start all that invasive testing. And I said, fine, we'll do some blood testing, but in the meantime, let me put you back on that stringent diet that did you so much good back in 1992. And hopefully by the time she gets back, we'll demonstrate that she's not suffering from a serious intestinal problem, and the diet will make her feel better. So we try to cover both our bases.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the best of both worlds. You get to do the fun tests, right? And you also get to make sure that the obvious stuff is dialed in.
Exactly. All right. This is a logical point for us to break. This is part one of our podcast with the developer of a great website, rebootedbody.com. There you'll find online programs and blogs and lots of podcasts because our guest today, Kevin Geary, is a professional broadcaster. He interviews guests of distinction in the field of natural medicine and lifestyle, including, I would like to think, yours truly, but many others. When we return in part two, we're going to talk about rebooting your diet, your sleep, and your exercise program. Kevin Geary calls it biohacking, and we'll cover that in just a moment. So stay with us. Stand by for part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with Kevin Geary.